hour of Art Bell was recorded for rebroadcast at this time. Please do not call.
From the Kingdom of Nye, we continue with your calls on Dreamland with Art Bell. Call Art now, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-TALK. First-time callers, area code 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Or the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. 727-1295 in the 702 area code. Now again, here's Art Bell.
Now again, here I am, my guest John Rhodes, the human-reptilian connection, and it sounds kind of strange at first, but as you listen, it begins to sound a little less strange. This, of course, is a program where we examine different sorts of things, things you don't hear about elsewhere. In a moment, I've got a couple of one very good facts and a question for John. Now, you could be sending me a fax if you would like. As a matter of fact, if you have a question for John Rhodes, my fax number is area code 702-727-8499. 702-727-8499. An earthquake in the Sierra Nevadas, between Nevada and California, of about 4.5. And before we continue with what we were doing, John, I want to ask you, this is just the latest in what has seemed like a worldwide swarm of earthquakes. I mean, it seems, John, they've been getting more frequent. Earthquakes are underground affairs. I just saw
that the lower magnitude earthquakes between 1982 and 1993, some of them, like I think it's from 2 to 3, 2 to 2.9, had increased over 8,000% frequency. So when you start looking at something laid out in a graphics form as telling you how often these earthquakes are happening and how much more they're happening every year, it tends to make one sit back and worry a little bit.
Yes, that's what I've been doing. And I've been doing, John, talk radio a long time now. And it is to the point now where I'm reporting one or two earthquakes a day most times. So you say there's an 8,000%?
In some cases it is. The larger magnitude earthquakes have not increased in frequency. They're beginning to, but overall the lower magnitude earthquakes have over a 10-year period or 12-year period. This shows that it's building up for massive energy release because it's got to snap somewhere along the line. When we look at the fact that FEMA, as an organization, 10 out of $11, according to some of the reports in newspapers that were reported, said that FEMA spent 11 out of $12 preparing the United States for Armageddon. I think that, yes, there's a definite worry about nuclear weapons getting into third world countries' hands and terrorist hands, but there's also a very logical precaution that our government would have to take in order to ensure its own survival. And that's one of the reasons that, like, since the 1950s, they've been heavily, heavily involved with building very, very deep underground bunkers.
Well, all right, here we are underground once again. It seems to me if there were an underground civilization of either creatures related or not related to us, if they had that kind of mobility underground, they might have the ability to manipulate in some way the tectonic pressures and releases and so forth and so on. Is that too speculative?
Well, no, I believe that that could be utilizing some sort of Reichian or Tesla technology or even other technology that we couldn't even put a name to.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I, from my own perspective, I think the Earth is somewhat of a living organism. And just as a human being goes in to get needles put into their head through acupuncture to relieve certain stresses and strains, I think that it's very possible to do that to the Earth. However, it's only a temporary remedy. The overall problem has to be cured. Otherwise, the remedy itself won't last.
All right. Here's a fax. Dear Art, greetings from a fellow Gemini. Your guest is interesting about the reptilian-human connection. Whenever you have a guest about alien species or ancient history, I frequently recall the five-part, two-hour movie named V. The movie was on TV, back when I had a TV. It's about an aliens coming to Earth to help us with many of our problems. But as the story progressed, one investigative reporter had a suspicion that all was not as rosy as they put out for one aspect, even though they looked human. The investigative reporter found out that beneath the disguise, they were reptilian who ate mammals, including humans. Have you and or your guest seen the movie?
Yes, I have seen the series and the film. I've also seen very many other reptilian forms recently come into the media in order to make us either afraid or love them. In the case such as E.T., we were made to feel very good and secure about the alien that is what we could refer to as like a gray.
Yeah, but
very
that,
small
but,
and not intimidating.
Or even cute. You know, they managed to get E.T. cute.
Right, and one scene, as a matter of fact, in that movie, it was even cuddled up with all bears.
That's right.
Yeah,
cute,
so,
you know, it loves children, dogs, that kind of thing. But somehow I get the feeling that a lot of... Well, for example, the report Linda did before you came on the air, did you hear that sound?
Yes, I did.
That would not come from something that I would describe as cute.
I kind of agree with that, but then at the same time is that, you know, we all have our perspective. I mean, to perhaps another being, that was celestial music, and to us, it's not.
Mm.
So, and when you look at... the programs like V and such. Take, for example, see, I believe that we have been seeing a lot of the grays. The grays, from what I've been able to learn through other researchers, such as what I consider the great researchers, like Bill Hamilton and Bruce Walton and Tom Adams and Cherry Hinkle and Tao out in California, from what we've been able to gather as a group is the fact that these 4.5 foot tall grays are an intermixture between genetically hybrid beings. They're used to be intermediaries between the reptilians and the humans, because if the reptilians came out full form, as they could and as they will in the future, it would be much too frightening for us now. So they use something a little less intimidating, which are these grays. With the media, when you looked at programs recently like Stargate...
Oh, I just saw Stargate. Gosh, what a movie.
Okay, now, when you start looking at a program like Stargate and realize that here's this being that made its presence known on a planet and had its association with ancient history, like the pyramid, and then said, I've come down here and I was part of that which created you.
Yes.
And you should pay homage to me. The last image we saw when this being was obliterated was that of a reptilian. A standing reptilian, and
that's
it comes
true.
Very fast, but you have to look at it. And that made us, on a very almost subliminal level, think of a reptile as something to be afraid of.
Yes.
We've heard abductions where humans have been abducted through UFO experience, in which they have been forcibly raped by reptilians. Large, seven foot tall beings with... that are bipedal, bifocal, and have, the regular scales and eyes that look like flame, and that statement in itself can be taken back to a lot of ancient writings, and that are forcibly raped. And when I started thinking, wait, I don't understand this. If the reptilians are like that, but yet they're trying to make the grays look good, why, if they're going to all come out someday, how could that be when we've had just the reports of the grays being presented to us as something that's really not.
Okay, what do you think the grays are? Are they biological entities? I've heard them described as that, and possibly machines.
Well, I believe that they're both. I believe that the original gene, or the genetic strain by which the grays came, originated from, they are just like we are, natural beings, and some of them are good and some of them are bad.
Mm.
But then again, I believe that maybe due to the scarcity of them, or not having too many here, that certain parts of their genetic strains were taken and chained up and linked together with human chains and or other chains. and became what you consider biological robotoids, who perhaps don't have a soul. But then again, we look at some animals and think that can't have a soul. But I think the main question here is that we've been so conditioned as a human species to be able to take what's visually presented to us and make very quick judgments. And as there are good humans and bad humans, so must there be reptilians who are of certain physical characteristics, say like a reptilian, right?
Yeah.
That is good as well as bad. There have got to be grays that are good as well as bad. That is one of the laws of nature.
All right. I also find quite a bit of religious underpinning as you discuss your philosophy of who you believe these beings are. Is that about right?
Well, you can't avoid it. I believe that if they've been here for as longer than we have, then obviously in some ways they have had the opportunity to manipulate our religious perspective.
So the argument then is, are they the creators, or is there a creator beyond? And the impression I get from you is you believe there is a creator beyond.
Oh, I definitely believe that.
Okay.
Just as the laboratory rat might turn to us and look over the edge of the cage and say, are you it? Right?
Yes.
And anyway, to get around to the connection that we have between these beings, I started looking into a book called The Dragons of Eden, written by a very intelligent man called Carl Sagan. And in Carl Sagan's book, he theorizes on the evolution of human intelligence. And in that book, he refers to a gentleman by the name of Paul MacLean, who's a neuroanatomist. Now, Paul MacLean has said through his own research and investigations that the most ancient part of the human brain is called the R complex. And the R stands for reptilian because we share the same configuration of matter with reptiles. And it is the most ancient part of the human brain that rests above the spinal cord. The neocortex and the limbic system are built around it. In other words, they're adaptations to this very ancient part of the brain. Well, if you believe in the regular creation theory or the evolutionary theory, which we came from a pond as fish and waddled up on the surface and we evolved from there, that would make sense because we would see the connections with ourselves and reptiles.
All right, well, thankfully, there appears no further connection, for I feel no draw to go out by my porch light where there's lots of bugs, you know, and thrust my tongue out and grab a few of them.
A forked tongue, I'm sure.
On that note, we'll pause for just a moment. Forked, I hope not, before I'm about to do a couple of commercials. Here is a deal you cannot refuse.
But on top of the fact that the neuroanatomists say that the most ancient part of the human brain, the most central part and archaic part, is called the R complex because it stands for reptilians and we share it with reptiles, There's also other striking connections that have been recently brought to my attention. And one of them was that in Omni magazine, September 1994, they had written an article May 1994, called Lizards Love. And what they discovered is that male iguanas were getting extremely, they were starting to love their owners, the female owners anyway, the women who owned iguanas.
Really?
And it happened during the menstrual cycle. And they discovered that it's because that female humans secrete a pheromone that is absolutely chemically identical to that of a female iguana. Chemically, it's an absolute identical match to a female iguana. And that's why the male iguanas were getting so amorous. And on top of that, you have many other connections, just as
You would say that as sort of a hormonal connection.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then when you start looking about, well, this most ancient part of the brain and all these connections, what does it mean? Well, when the human embryo is in the female womb, it undergoes probably during the first 7 weeks certain changes in its formation. As a matter of fact, what happens is genetic history starts replaying itself. through the embryonic growth.
John, all right, I'm sorry to stop you again, but what about the gigantic difference between our systems, mammals, warm-blooded, reptilians, cold-blooded? I mean, that really is a big, seemingly gigantic evolutionary difference.
Yes, but at the same time, even paleontologists today, some paleontologists are starting to think twice as to whether all the dinosaurs back in the age of the dinosaurs were in fact cold-blooded.
Oh, you're right. I've heard that. You're absolutely right. That's been some of the later news.
Right.
I'm sorry I didn't recall that. Thank you.
And according to Dale Russell, who's a scientist, anthropological scientist with the Canadian National Museum of Natural Science in Canada, he said that a dinosaur by the name of Stenonicosaurus equalus, if it had not undergone such a catastrophic change as apparently took place and killed out the dinosaur age, that because of its brain-to-body mass ratio, which was extremely close to those of primitive mammals, and the fact that it was bipedal, that if it had been allowed to evolve as the dominant species that it was heading towards being, that nowadays it would have resembled that of a walking, talking, what we consider through looking at the abduction report, reptilian being.
All right, John, hold it right there. We've got a break at the bottom of the hour and something I've got to get done very quickly. So let me do that. We'll take our break and come right back. My guest is John Rhodes. This subject, fascinating, the human-reptilian connection.
Many of you health-conscious folks know about
M60GMX. Now, back to John Rhodes. John, I know I'm skipping around a lot, but when I have somebody who's an expert on underground, I've got a lot of questions, and I know that you've heard about this. I have a good friend, John, who built a porch here in Pahrump, Nevada, other side of the valley. And he sank big beams into the ground in order to do this. After he built it, he had such a bad hum, John, that he could not sleep at night in his house. That's how bad it was. He ended up having to redo the whole thing in a different way. Something was being picked up and transmitted into his home from underground. What have you heard about this?
Well, I know that the underground hum that's been heard, like in Taos,
yes,
is not limited to just the Taos area, but has actually been heard in different countries around the world as well. And it's been happening for longer than most people realize. My own idea of what it may be, we've heard the theories about using ELF and loop antennas to be able to communicate, you know, through the water and over the atmosphere with submarines around the world.
That is correct.
I know that the the Colorado Bureau of Mines patented a device that actually uses ELF to communicate through the rock. In other words, it doesn't need any cables or anything. It just uses the rock to carry the signal. And the lower the frequency, the greater the coverage area. And when you start talking about, see, all I perceive now as my reality is moving atoms and frequency. And all we really have to live by this time around in our lives is this mass or different combinations of frequencies combined together to create different objects and different light. And when you start talking about the Taos hum, you're talking about a frequency that's being put through the earth, but yet at the same time, there's a lot of natural crystal formations within the earth that could take certain branches of this frequency and, I guess you could say, change it or mutate it. So we may have some sort of a sympathetic resonance with it.
Interesting.
Around the meninges of the brain, which is the sheath covering the blood-brain barrier, we have a high quantity of what they call magnetite crystal.
Mm-hmm.
And what this is that Dr. Kirschfink of Caltech had started looking into this, thinking that there's higher concentrations of magnetite crystal. Now, magnetite, mind you, is a naturally forming magnet ore. It's like lodestone in the earth. We don't eat it, but our body actually manufactures it. So when we have magnetite crystals surrounding our brain, that means that we as humans have everything necessary to make a transmitter or receiver, which is crystals, magnets, and energy and minerals. So if you're getting these different frequency fluctuations, I don't doubt whatsoever that we are somehow sympathetically resonating with those frequencies. As to what they could be, well, like we said before, perhaps they are some sort of a subsurface radar around these sensitive facilities looking for anything that may be coming near them.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Because a lot of these reports have actually come in from areas where previously people have said that there's some sort of anomalous activity happening with clandestine black book operations. So that's one possibility. The
All
other
right.
is, of course, you know, the communications. And the other one is, of course, and I've thought about it, and I don't know how true it could be, that the people who are hearing them have implants, and somehow these implants are being triggered. So these people are being able to hear a sound. Because they're not quite hearing it, but they're sensing it all over. Now, I've heard sounds like that that have continued for a period of 2 or 3 weeks, like a clicking, but then that clicking has stopped. I've also found out that other people associated with the group have heard the same sound at the same time, and it all stopped at the same time.
All right, this is from Sean in Yucca Valley. Then I'm going to give out the numbers, and we're going to answer some phones. Art, I have often heard it claimed there is only a 2% difference between humans and chimpanzees' genetic material. This seems to argue against any human-reptilian melding. Would you please ask John to comment on the point? In other words, as we look at genetic connection, I think the facts are is correct. There's a very close relationship to chimpanzees.
Oh, absolutely.
But genetically, not so close to reptilians.
Well, like I said, the connection is definitely there to reptilians. I'm not saying the primary connection or the most evidentiary one is, or the most dominant connection is. I do believe, like the caller had called in or faxed in, that yes, there is a high degree of connection with regular mammals, like the primitive apes. However, it appears to be that the most dormant form of a connection that we have, coming from the archaic part of the brain, is that of a reptilian. So, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Which came first? The monkey or the reptile. So when you're talking about, I guess you could say, Paul McLean says that he's been able to excise like laboratory rats parts of their brain, or laboratory animals parts of their R complex. And what he's realized is that that R complex dominates our social, our behavior patterns as far as hierarchy, territoriality, ritualism, and aggressive behavior. And this is how he was able to find that out. So when we're talking about like who are we, it makes more sense to me that there's some sort of an important connection there with the reptilians, because I haven't heard too many stories of abductions by monkeys.
That's a good point.
Where I have heard the abductions by reptilians.
All right, John, let me quickly give out the numbers, and we'll take some calls. Fascinating topic. Gee. First-time caller line, area code 702-727-1222. The wild card line, several of those available, area code 702-727-1295. Toll-free west of the Rockies, it's 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, it's 1-800-825-5033. Just one other quick thing, John, then we'll pick up some calls. The natural magnetic material that you say surrounds our brain.
Right.
Wouldn't that, they're doing a lot of studies now about electromagnetic fields and how they affect us. And when I say that, I mean even radio, television, and microwave transmission. Do you see a connection, in other words? If we are receptors, then it seems to me that sort of energy might be received and or might be affecting us.
Right. Well, there's so many forms of energy that we're aware of, but I believe that there are so many forms of more subtle energies that we're not aware of, and I think we catch the full spectrum. Yeah, I think it's very unhealthy to live around power lines. As a matter of fact, they say that when people go into caves or cave systems or underground, there's a natural insulation there provided for them, so they're no longer walking on the surface as just regular human antennas.
That would be true.
You just have to stick up a good antenna, and you can figure out that, my God, there's thousands of frequencies shooting straight through us all the time. Thousands.
Yes, well, they're also doing a lot of work on intense magnetic fields, and I hate to admit this, I'm a ham operator.
Right.
And I've been doing so since I've been about 12 years old, so I've been getting exposed to close-in, large electromagnetic fields, RF, all my life. And frankly, I'm sorry to have to report it, but they've done a lot of reports indicating that amateur radio operators and people exposed to a lot of RF do tend to have a higher cancer rate. So there may be something to all this.
But then again, just to comfort you, I know that the mind is so much more powerful than we've ever been allowed to previously conceive that it is or believe that it is.
Well, thanks for the comfort, John. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with John Rhodes. Hi.
Hi.
Where are you?
I'm calling from Oklahoma City.
Okay.
I've been listening to your show, and I just caught in on the latter part of your show this evening. But one of the things I had in question when we were talking about reptilian is I have a large amount of paperwork and work that's been gathered for the past 10 years from a friend of mine who believes she's an alien or a part alien. And she's given me her work, and it has hundreds of drawings and cryptic writings. And I'd like to know whom I can get in touch with to show this work to.
Well, cryptic writings, aliens, does it seem to relate to some sort of reptilian connection?
To some degree, in some parts of her notes it does.
It does.
I went and bought a particular book on cryptic writings from past centuries, trying to decipher some of the information.
All right. Listen on the air. John, it's a good opportunity. If somebody like that or anybody else wants to get hold of you, or maybe have you written a book, John?
Well, no, the book's in the works. I've just made a recent, we'll get into it a little bit more if you want. But
all right, then let me try this avenue. If they want to get hold of you and get you information.
Okay, this is what you do. First of all, if it's something that you're really, really frightened of somebody interfering or intercepting, the way to do this is to take it and fully register it and heavily insure it. This way, if it's ever missing in the mail accidentally, then you stand to make a little bit of money from it.
Sure.
Okay, now, I've had so many things missing through the mail. This is the only way I really, truly get things where I want them to go. I figure if they're going to end up missing, I might as well make a little living at it. Now, I'm going to give you an address, and the address is John Rhodes, R-H-O-D-E-S.
Right.
And that's Post Office Box 50381, Henderson, that's H-E-N-D-E-R-S-O-N, Nevada, 89016-0381. Now, I also have a voicemail system set up.
Do it again, though.
Okay. It's John Rhodes.
Right.
Post Office Box 50381. Henderson, Nevada, 89016-0381. And I have a voicemail also, which in case anybody needs to or would like to receive a package of information regarding this research and other related research, if they do a money order or check for $10 and send it to me, I'll get them off a comprehensive package. And if you'd like, go ahead and send it to that address. My voicemail, in case you want to notify me of anything or need some further information like the address again, is area code 702-391-3335.
Okay.
That's 702-391-3335. And one other thing I have available in case people are interested in is I've done some psychoacoustic and psycho... work with psycho work. I've done some work with sound, and I've been able to create a subliminal self-hypnosis tape for abductees. And the reason I did this is because so many people are feeling like they've somehow been touched, and they don't have the money to go spend $90 an hour.
That's right.
To go to a psychiatrist to get hypnosis. So I've used some very ancient metaphysical tones that correspond with the chakra, and I've gotten together with a very famous hypnotist out here in Las Vegas by the name of Helen Balcom.
Right.
And we designed this self-hypnosis tape that teaches people how to get themselves into the self-hypnotic state, as well as empower them through their experiences instead of allowing them to sit in the victimization role and speak and recall some of these events if they so choose.
All right, if it's
and
not...
That's, go ahead.
I was going to say, if it's not $90 an hour, how much is it?
It's $10, and once you buy it, I just welcome you until I otherwise tell you to go ahead and copy it, and please hand it out to your friends.
That's
because
nice.
Part of my job here, not only am I a spokesman for a group of people who have spent their lives working on subjects such as this, but my job here right now is to help people and empower people. And that's one of the reasons I also sometimes, when I go out and give lectures, I'll spend an extra day, take a handful of people, and teach them to investigate for themselves. Because we all need to put at least a little bit of work into it. And the more people who put work into it, and forward the information to someone like myself, which is like a pivot point, then the more ability we have to be able to get a clearer perception on what's going on.
All right, glad you got all that out, and we'll be back to John Rhodes in just one moment. Here's something that's really affected my life, and not just mine, but my wife's too. My wife has asthma, and trust me on this, our home is a different place since we turned on the Alpine system. Alpine is not just for homes either. It's for offices, restaurants, hospitals, and of course any industry that works with toxic chemicals. But toxic air is not always obvious. Ever hear of the sick building syndrome? It's caused by inhaling indoor air polluted by things like bacteria, viruses, mold, mildew, pollen, and secondary smoke, as well as toxic gases released by carpeting, furnishings, and all that sort of thing. The Alpine air purification system just oxidizes away and kills toxins in the air. Helps you and your employees avoid things like headaches, sinus and respiratory problems, fatigue, and more. The Alpine system is built to run 24 hours a day and last you 15 years. And it comes with a money-back guarantee. It's portable. It's simple to use. You plug it into any 110-volt outlet, and it costs just pennies a day to operate. Call International Power Foods and Products at 1-800-557-0303. All models come with a one-year warranty, including their new travel unit for your car, motorhome, or hotel room. For clean and energized air, call them now. 1-800-557-0303. Hey, I've got something for those of you who like looking over the edge. It's called UFO Facts World Report, and it's a new monthly newsletter that comes straight to your home, gives you access to hard-hitting, no-nonsense information on the latest in UFO happenings in your area and all around the world. The latest sightings, latest developments in abductions and encounters. For an introductory offer of just $19.95 a year, you've got access to all this information distilled into an objective and concise report written by seasoned journalists and packed full of facts. UFO Facts plugs you into what's going on. It's your access to the best thinkers, the best analysts on the subject. UFO Facts critiques the latest books, keeps you informed about upcoming conventions and seminars taking place in your state. Plus, you get advance notice of lectures in your local area. Look, find out what's happening at the government level and the worldwide level. Call 1-800-830-9830. Operators are ready for your call 24 hours a day. That's 1-800-830-9830. Or send a check for $19.95 to UFO Facts, P.O. Box 2757, Anaheim, California, 92814. Your UFO Facts World Report newsletter carries an unconditional money-back guarantee from the publishers. Again, that's 1-800-830-9830. Okay, this is a shot in the dark, John. It's a fact. Ask John if he's ever heard or seen a human who has small holes on the side of the head near the top of the ear and in slightly toward the temple. I have exactly what I describe on both sides of my head and have yet to see this on any other human being. If your guest has no such experience, can you refer me to somebody you might know, Barbara in Santa Barbara? No, I certainly can't, John. Have you ever heard of such a thing?
I hesitate to answer simply because it hits so close to home. This last year, our five-year-old girl had recently awoken one morning and was worrying about her ears and scratching at them. And I looked inside, and just on the inside of the ear, but still within the actual outside fleshy piece against the temple, was a perfectly circular cored-out hole. Now, that in itself would not be so remarkable if it weren't for the fact that when I looked in the opposite ear, 180 degrees around, on her other side of her head was another perfectly cylindrical hole right in the exact same location. So, yes, I haven't heard very many other people talk about it, but it's really strange that your caller should happen to ask that question.
What?
I mean, that's really odd.
Yeah, okay. What would you say to her? I mean,
all I could say is that...
Do you want her to contact you?
Well, yeah. I mean, she's more than welcome to contact me, as well as I invite absolutely anybody out there whatsoever who may have information regarding any experiences or any other information regarding the reptilians or reptiles or any sort of a contact or abduction to contact me and send me a copy of the information. I'd really appreciate it. That way it would enable me to be able to get a little better perspective on what's going on.
Here's a quick...
This is Talk 102.